I'm speaking today with Amy Price, who's a candidate for Houston City Council at-large number 4. Amy, before we begin, just so everyone who listens to this knows, you and I have known each other for a long time. We've been friends for more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I just wanted to disclose that. Why are you running for this office?
I think, like a lot of people, I started off upside down on my knowledge. I knew a lot more about what was going on the federal level and less about what was going on the state level and less about what was going on the local level. And I got concerned about what was going on in the federal and state level. And I started thinking, well, what can I as one person do? And I think the logical answer to that is you get active locally. And so I got more informed about what was going on locally, and I hope to make a difference in what's going on in our city and help grow some good things that'll also help the state and federal levels.
Now, you say on your website that what inspired you to get involved was the Green Party and its 10 principles. How does that relate to local governance? It's often easy to see how that sort of thing relates to federal and state level. How does it relate to the local level?
There's a saying that there is no partisan way of fixing a pothole, and I think that's absolutely untrue. You know, who is paying for the pothole to be fixed? Whose potholes get fixed first? How do you fund the fixing of the potholes? What materials are you using to fix the potholes? So, I understand your question. I had somebody ask me, well, Amy, you know, the running of a local polity is a lot of nuts and bolts stuff, and that's true. But I think if you do your job right, you don't separate what's going on a nuts and bolts level from the ideals that back it up.
Okay. All right, tell me a little bit more about yourself, your background, just so everyone knows who you are.
Right. Well, I was going to start with college, but let me back up a little bit. Unlike a lot of politicians, I grew up pretty poor, and I had some challenges to overcome. Part of it was not a lot of money. Part of it was I was raised by a single parent who was an extremely hard worker. I think she might have missed 5 days of work in her life. She was also an alcoholic and emotionally abusive, and so I had some work to do to overcome some challenges from that. But I did, and despite being in a position that could have led me into a really bad spot, I got kicked out of the house starting from a pretty young age. I did what I needed to do in school, and I went to a great college. And I found myself there not doing exactly what I needed to do. I hadn't really learned great study skills in high school. So I didn't know how to fix myself, so I decided to join the Navy and get the discipline I needed there. And I did that, and I graduated, and I came back. And I was lucky enough to get a job in art history, which was my degree field. And I loved working for the institution, didn't love the job, so I quit to become a musician, a violinist, and violin teacher. And I mention all of this in part to say that I know how to overcome obstacles, and I know how to work with people because my successes are absolutely a result of being interdependent with really good folks.
Okay. What do you see as the city's top priorities that you would like to work on as a member of City Council?
Well, a huge part of the budget is HPD. And so HPD needs to be used efficiently and effectively. And there are two things I'd like to tackle with HPD. One is to reprioritize them slightly. We spend enormous amounts of time and money on detaining and finding and prosecuting people who hold personal use quantities of cannabis. Huge amounts of time and money on this. And it's not a war we look like we're winning. It's not tenable. We need to use HPD. We need to use that resources wisely, and that means put them in communities where they really will make our streets safer. Use them to fight the fact that we are the North American hub for human slavery, use them to fight the fact that we are the largest single city portal for funneling guns into Mexico. And then I mentioned that I'd like to see more police on a community level. And I think we need to address that. We need to have real community-based policing in place, because right now that's not the model we have, and I think it's not serving our city properly.
You're running for a seat that is currently held by an incumbent as opposed to the open at-large seat. Why did you make that choice?
Well, I think Mr. Bradford and others say that experience matters. And I think it does. And I think having the wrong sort of experience matters too. This is a little bit hard to talk about. So let me just say, if you Google Bradford and Crime Lab, you'll find out some of the reasons that I chose to run for this particular position.
All right. Let's go back to the budget, since that is obviously the biggest issue that the city deals with every year. The current budget had to cut about $100 million from services, laid off about 747 people to bring it into balance. What is your assessment of the budget that council passed for this fiscal year?
The city has now laid off, I think, about 800 people, because there's another round. And I really would have liked to have seen more efforts to avoid the layoffs and do something creative instead. I know that the city unions have done a lot with accepting furloughs, and maybe more could have been done with furloughs, so that instead of just taking these people's jobs away, they could have reduced hours worked. We could perhaps have job sharing programs. But I think there could have been innovative ways of dealing with this rather than just going directly to layoffs, and that's definitely something I would have liked to have seen.
Do you think anything needs to be done on the revenue side?
I do. Pretty much most of the things we can do with revenue are going to take a little time to grow, and that's okay. But actually, I think that's imperative to start looking at that kind of thing. Mayor Parker seems pretty determined not to raise taxes. And I know that she was pinged for being behind tax raises when she was running for mayor, so I'm not quite sure how that works. But it should at least be looked at as a possibility, and my impression is that it wasn't even on the table. It's one thing we could look at. I'd also like to see us look into a city version of the Bank of North Dakota. North Dakota is the only state in the union that has a state bank, and it is doing exceptionally well right now. Some people point to their oil, but Alaska has lots of oil and they're not doing too great. California has lots of oil and they're not doing too great. The one thing that makes North Dakota really different is that bank, because it acts as a mini Fed and it helps keep money local, and it funnels the money back into local businesses. And I'd like to see Houston examine this kind of system and see what we can come up with.
Okay. There were a couple of referendums on ballot this past year relating to the city of Houston. There was the Renew Houston proposition, now known as Rebuild Houston. Did you vote for the Renew Houston proposition?
No. And the reason I didn't was because Renew Houston comes from a good place. The value behind Renew Houston is we want a livable city, one that we can continue to navigate in, even if it's flooding, and we want our property to be safe, or even if it's raining, and we want our property to be safe, even if it's raining. But the solution that it proposes is an engineering solution. And an engineering solution is not going to fix flooding in Houston. If we make our drainage system as good as it can possibly be, because of the fact that our streets are hard surfaces, what's going to happen is the rain's going to fall and it will flood, and then it might fairly quickly drain off, but it's still going to flood in the meantime, right? And after the flooding, here's what's going to happen. We're going to have increased water going through those improved sewage systems. which means that less water is going to go down into the ground, which means we're going to have subsidence, which means more cracks in the road, more cracks in our foundation. We're going to have less water available for our trees, that the next time we have a drought, they're going to start dying even sooner. Even a well-planned drainage system is going to almost certainly pose risks for the folks who are downstream of the drainage, and it's pretty much a certainty that we're going to have to dredge the ship channel out more frequently because there's going to be more silt and more debris going through it. That's what's going to happen if we use an engineering-based system to try to fix this problem. So what I'm saying is we can't control the flooding, but what we can do is we can prevent the flooding. And to do that, we need to make inroads in increasing our green space to hardscape ratio. We can do that by things like installing living roofs on the buildings that will support them and building buildings that can support living roofs. And by a living roof, what I mean is there are actual roofs that have can be entirely covered in turf or partially covered in turf, and that's part of the solution. We can have rain collection systems in place. Well, homeowners even now can go out and buy rain barrels, and that has the added benefit of, in times of drought, there's a way with these reserves, at least for a time, to water your lawn. And then for that matter, we can stop having lawns, which we're all used to, I understand, but lawns are kind of semi-permeable. It's hard for the water to soak into grass fast enough that there's a really heavy rain. Instead, if we planted landscapes that used native plants and were kind of bumpier rather than smooth, it gives the rain a chance to soak in better. So this is the kind of solution that's actually going to work for Houston.
Can't we do some of that in addition to what we're doing with improving the drainage?
Well, sure we can, but if the point of improving the drainage is to make the flooding go away, and that's not going to make the flooding go away, then what's the point of spending all this money on doing that? Now, if we have an infrastructure that needs to be fixed, that needs to be updated, that's one thing, but that's not what the proposition was about.
Okay. The other proposition on the ballot was relating to the red light cameras. Did you vote to keep the red light cameras or to get rid of them?
I'm in favor of the red light cameras. Yeah. And I think, you know, my opinion on that is not terribly important. I think the important issue is, since the referendum happened, what should be done with the red light cameras? And I think it's true to say that if we say we're a democracy, and we do say that we're a democracy, then we have to go with the will of the people. Now, the people have spoken, and they don't want the cameras, so the cameras need to not be used to enforce the traffic safety laws. That's what was in the proposition. Now, we're in a pickle. You know, everybody knows about the fact that if we break this contract, we're going to be liable for somewhere in the area of $20 million. That's not a great situation to be in. So I think what needs to happen, kludgy though this is to have yet another referendum, because now people know what's at stake. And then on the basis of that referendum, we can decide how to go forward.
Well, arguably council has already decided by passing a repeal ordinance, but at this point it's just a matter of the contract. But do you approve or disapprove of how the city handled getting to the point where it is now of trying to get out of repealing the ordinance and litigating the contract?
Well, I think the fact that this matter was on the ballot to begin with is a problem. It pretty clearly should have been a matter. It was not handled properly. It should never have come to a vote. There are legal reasons behind that. I think the fact that we had a contract that didn't have a viable escape clause is a problem. We should never have been in that position.
What is your assessment of Mayor Parker in her first term of office?
First, let me say that it's got to be a really hard job, and I think she inherited a difficult situation. That being said, there's some things that happened that I wish had happened differently. One was the response to the police beating of Chad Hawley. In response to this, the mayor revamped the Citizens Review Board. But the problem is, the revamp doesn't take into account the recommendations passed down by the ACLU. And the ACLU has done a whole lot of work on what works for citizen review boards around the country. And we don't meet even half of those 10 recommendations. For example, it recommends that a citizen review board be held somewhere independent of the thing that it's reviewing. And our citizen review board is going to meet square in HPD offices. It recommends that that review board meetings be open to the public. And I imagine, I looked at the founding documents for this group, I see no provisions for that. And I imagine that since it's in HPD offices, there's not going to be an opportunity for that. Most importantly, what most people point to is the fact that to be truly effective, a citizens review board has to have subpoena power. And this review board does not have that subpoena power. And so these are real problems. And I think that happened because the Citizens Review Board was established so quickly in the wake of this horrible incident. And I understand the need for speed, but the need for speed should have meant that the process was started quickly, not that the whole thing was decided and disposed of so quickly that it wasn't a good solution, and I'm afraid that that's what happened. And the point of a review board is to make policing work for the community it's in and for the police. They do a hard job, and I don't think this does that. So that's one thing I wish had been different. Another thing I wish had been different was the mayor seems to be using 380 agreements fairly liberally. And the thing I know the most about is the Walmart that is coming in close to the Heights. We should be doing business with businesses that pay a living wage, have just hiring and promotion practices, and we can't say this about Walmart. So we have no business supporting a corporation like that. We need to think about who we want in our city, who we're going to entice to come, and that corporation shouldn't be one of them. So those are the things I didn't like. But then on the other hand, I know that Mayor Parker is deeply involved with mayors against illegal guns, and that's really important in Houston. As I mentioned before, we are a primary source for funneling guns to Mexico. From a human rights perspective, I'm appalled that my city is involved in this. From a safety perspective, we don't want a neighbor, and Mexico is most definitely a neighbor, where violence is so integral a part of the fabric of society. And not to mention the fact that when the guns are on their way through our city, they're coming through our city. That's going to make us less safe. And so I appreciate the fact that she's working with this group to find innovative ways of dealing with this problem. And then I think the thing that she's doing that I'm most happy about is she seems to be continuing and expanding on the green initiatives that Mayor White started. And this is absolutely the direction our city should be going in. We have some challenges we're going to be facing in this new climate and coming up on some resource scarcities. And if we keep going in this direction and maybe go forward a little faster in this direction, we're going to be poised to meet those challenges pretty well.
Okay. Since you mentioned the trafficking of guns and human beings a couple of times, those are obviously issues that involve the federal government as well. Do you think there are opportunities for the city to get the federal government more involved or to work better with them?
Well, I know that one of the initiatives that Mayors Against Illegal Guns is working on is trying to coordinate that effort. So I'm sure there are opportunities. I can't say it's something I've researched a lot, but I think that partnering with larger entities is a absolute must do.
Okay. What would you like Mayor Parker's priorities to be for the next 2 years?
I think we have to concentrate on being green. As I said, I think the world is a changing place, and it's changing in such a way that it's really not a nice idea, it's an imperative idea. And that's one thing. Another thing is, as I mentioned, I know we need to figure out what's our vision for the city, and how are we going to make that vision come true? Who are we going to invite in? Who are we going to subsidize, much like the Walmart thing? There is a growing sector there is a lot of work being done with alternative energies. Unfortunately, some of those companies are shutting down in America and opening up in China instead because of certain opportunities, not because of the labor costs it's got, but because land is available and because they get really cheap loans. So how can we make that happen and entice this sort of business to Houston? This is the kind of thing we need to look at.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November, why should they vote for you to be the next council member in at-large number four?
I think there are, you look at what are the intentions of the person, what are the abilities of the person. And I think I spoke a little bit to my abilities when I introduced who I was. My intentions, when I came back from college, I kind of turned my nose up at Houston, I gotta admit. I had just come from a place that was really beautiful, and I was surrounded by people who mostly thought like me, so that it made it easy, right, to be there. And I came back to Houston, and I lamented the fact that I had left. And then the older I got, the more I realized how lucky I was to be where I was. I think this city is pretty amazing. I say that I value diversity. We say as a society that we value diversity. Houston is one of the most diverse places you're going to come across. You can eat Chinese food one day, Ethiopian food the next day. If you don't like the cultural festival that's going on this month, wait till next month. I think there's a lot in this city to be proud of. And I am running, in part, like I said, because I want to bring a voice at the local level that needs to percolate up. I'm a progressive, and I will call myself that to anybody I come across. And also, on a selfish level, I want to be a part of something that I'm so proud of, and I am proud of my city. And I think one other thing, you should vote for me because I'm a violin teacher, not despite the fact that I'm a violin teacher. We say as a culture that we respect diversity, and yet we have legislative bodies that are made up pretty much entirely of business people and lawyers. And I think there is room and a need in these legislative bodies for people who aren't, because we need other perspectives. If all you have are business people and lawyers on a city council, then they're probably going to think in terms of a traditional bottom line, money. But this is a government, it's not a business, and the bottom line has to be people. I will keep that in mind, and I will remind city council of that whenever I need to.
Okay. Amy Price, thank you very much for talking to me today.